Hey, welcome to the Antonio Neves Show, where I share powerful stories, actionable lessons, and insights designed to elevate your personal and professional growth. I'm Antonio Neves, the best-selling author of Stop Living on Autopilot, a top executive coach, and internationally recognized leadership speaker. For me and the work that I do, it's all about getting a little bit better every day. Today, we have an amazing show because we're being joined by adventurer and author Bassam Tarazi. Bassam has traveled to over 75 countries and is the author of Borders, Bandits, and Baby Wipes, A Big Adventure in a Tiny Car. Now, some of Bassam's adventures include trekking the Alaskan Denali, reaching Everest Base Camp, wild experiences in Borneo, and getting seasick on an ice-breaking ship in Antarctica. In an incredible conversation, Bassam and I discuss the importance of doing hard things, planned grit, and the value of taking risks and trying out new things. But before we get into this episode, I want to let you know about my newsletter that's read by thousands of men across the globe, and also plenty of women. That newsletter is called Man Morning. Man Morning is a weekly newsletter for married, growth-driven fathers who are committed to getting better. In each issue, I share actionable lessons, stories, and insights, just like on this podcast, that are designed to fuel your personal and professional growth. Men, listen, you will love this newsletter. Head on over to manmorning.com and sign up for free. And when you do, you will get a free gift in your email inbox. Okay, let's get into our episode with Bassam Tarazi, where we talk about the importance of doing hard things, planned grit, and why you should take risks and try new things. Bassam Tarazi, welcome to the podcast, man.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, as we talked about in the introduction, but you've done some wild things over the course of your life. We're talking about Everest Base Camp. We're talking about being in Alaska in the Denali. You've been on ice-breaking ships like in Antarctica. I mean, I could go on and on and on. My question I want to start with for you, when we talk about planned grit, why have you done so many hard things in your life that most people would 100% want to avoid?
I mean, it's partly because of my family is from other parts of the world, which has kind of taught me that, like, hey, other and travel and distances are not things to be afraid of. So I think from a very young age, I was, you know, introduced to the world. And then I have kind of two thoughts about how I've lived my life. One is, one day we'll be dead and none of this will matter. And two, my grandfather's advice, which was live an interesting life. No one wants to talk to an old man with no stories to tell. And so I think I've just been a student of the human experience and in this giant galaxy and universe that we're spinning around in. I just want to check out this rock we live on, which is kind of how I've always approached it.
Yeah, live an interesting life. I remember you told me that a long time ago. That's always stuck with me. You know, a lot of people, when they talk about vacations, they talk about taking time off, like especially I think in Western cultures. For the vast majority of people, it's R&R. You hear about the all-inclusive resorts. You want to lay on a beach. People are like, I can't wait to sit by a pool and read this novel. I know you like to read a lot, but for some reason, I just don't see you enjoying yourself sitting by a pool at an all-inclusive resort. Are those things that you shun, or are you okay with a mix of the balance?
I think it's a mix now that I'm married and have a wife who does enjoy those things. I think for me, I sometimes, and maybe this is the child in me, but I think, hey, if I'm sitting at a beach, this isn't a good story, both for myself or to tell later. And I know that's not a good thing to have. I think the flip of that is, I think I've always architected my work life so that I didn't need a vacation because I was burnt out and exhausted. I think a lot of people are like, I need a vacation to go recharge, presumably for more work. And I've just never been like that. I'm kind of like, hey, I saved up and I'm going to do Everest Base Camp, right? Like that's where my energy is saved to go invest in that. So I think maybe I've been lucky, and partly because I've architected my life that way, when it's time for me to go do a big, gnarly, messy, hairy, uncomfortable trip, I'm not exhausted, because I think that would be very difficult to do if you literally just need to rest and sleep and zone out.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second. You said something really interesting. You said the way you've architected your life. So a lot of people, they would say, man, I don't have time to go all the way over to Everest. That's in Nepal, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. How am I going to go to Borneo, where you've been? How am I going to spend time going to Antarctica? What's wild about you, and I've always been blown away by this, is that you've done all these things. Most times you've had a full-time job while you've done these things. A lot of people think it's impossible. Now, obviously, you're not doing all of these things in the same calendar year, but is there anything unique about how you've architected your life or your schedule in the midst of having a standard job where we're not in Europe, where we're getting a guaranteed like 6 weeks off of vacation, but you still made it work?
Yeah, I think so. What part of that architecting is, I feel like a career opportunist, and I've kind of like hopped around laterally to different things. And sometimes it's in those breaks, it's in the in-betweens that I've kind of constructed. And sometimes it's a leap and it's scary, but I said, hey, I have a month or I have 6 weeks here. You know, it'd be great for me to do X. I do remember a story though, back in 2008, I think it was, I wanted to go to Patagonia and do this giant trip, you know, at the southern tip of South America. And I didn't have enough days saved up. Or it might have been the Everest trip, I don't remember. But I remember walking up to my boss and telling him, and I said, listen, I am going on this trip, right? So it wasn't, can I? It was, I'm going, I don't have the days. I would need like 3 days of like unpaid leave for this to be, you know, covered. Is like, you do what you need to do kind of thing. And I think what I was saying, I was betting on myself that I was like doing good work. I was valued at the company and I felt like I earned the right to ask for it, right? Or to state it. And he kind of just rolled his eyes. He's like, it's fine, just go. You know, he was like, we'll figure it out. And so I think had I told myself, well, the trip is 13 days and I don't have as many days, so I can't do it, then I wouldn't have done it. Instead of, oh, I booked it. So I pretty much told him, hey, I am going. If you need to fire me, then fire me, but I'm going. And he laughed. And so I think it was one of those things where I just, hey, nobody's thinking about you. Nobody cares. So they're not going to have you go on a 13-day trip.
This also is a great reminder, man, that especially if you're good at what you do, if you bring value, you bring results, there's always an exception. There's always an exception. And I think about how many people are willing to do what you did to negotiate for what you want. And you did something that G's do. I'm going to say G's do this. You didn't ask.
Yeah.
You told.
Now,
people, how come your vacation gets denied? Because you said, hey, can I have the second week of November off versus saying, I'm taking the second week of November off. Those are two different ways to approach it. What were you going to say?
That's right. And I think on that point, I wasn't entering it being an ass about it. You know, I wasn't, it was just like, hey, this is important to me. I'm going. How can we make this work on the back end? If you need to have unpaid leave, I'm happy. You know what I mean? So it was just kind of like, you know, that. But I was going to say is, I think I was maybe like 16 or 17. I remember telling my dad, talking about what you want to do in life. And I said, Dad, I just want to travel. You know, but he's like, who's going to pay for that? You know, he was like, Sam, no one's going to pay you to walk the earth. You need a skill. And that was, I mean, for some reason, you think, wow, Sam, you really needed to learn that at 17. But I did, right? Because I thought like, ooh, I just want to travel and National Geographic and all this stuff. And he was just like, bro, like, you need a skill. Like, this is the world you live in. You need to trade your time for some sort of value. And so I've always like thought about it in that way of like, hey, you can't just go do your crazy stuff out of the gate, right? You got to earn the right. I say that a lot in life. Hey, you have to earn the right to take that 13-day trip. So that's important too.
Nobody's going to pay you to walk the world, right on. That's real. Yeah, you got to definitely 100% earn that right. And I think most people are unwilling to do that. But can you imagine? And someone's going to listen to this, and they've had the opportunity probably to have a life-changing trip that they did not take because they didn't have 3 days.
That's right.
They didn't have three more. And sometimes you just got to find a way to take those days, or you know, like, you know what, you may get fired. And if you're good at what you do, like you just said, you're probably not going to get fired. It may get reprimanded, but some things are worth getting reprimanded. I want to ask you this. I think doing what you've done requires, I'm not sure if I'm framing this right, but a willingness, a certain amount of selfishness. Like, you and I are very similar in that I don't think we feel bad for putting ourselves first. I know I don't necessarily feel bad for putting myself first, because if I don't, that's actually only going to hurt those around me. My wife, my kids, I got to take care of my health, my well-being, and all those things.
I'm thinking about a story where guy meets girl. Beside you meet who's going to become now your future wife. And right when you meet her, when things are going really, really good in the relationship, you're reaching that interesting inflection point. You have something booked on your calendar that's going to take you away for, I believe, weeks at a time. Now, I know a lot of dudes, if they're at that point in the relationship, like, you know what? She's amazing. You know what? I don't want to lose her. I'm not taking this trip. What did Basav Tarazi do?
I told her it's funny enough. 3 months after I met her, I went away on a 2-month trip down to the Galapagos and Machu Picchu. But at that time, I had already booked a trip for the following year to go to Antarctica. And it was going to be like a 3-week trip. And I basically told her, hey, no matter how this relationship goes, like, I like where this is going. But next February, I am going to Antarctica for 3 weeks, like no matter what, because it was a crazy investment, I'll just say, right? It was the 7th continent. It was like, I've always wanted to get there. I saved up money and it was something that was very important to me. And I knew I might not be able to do it later than life, to this way. And she was super supportive of that, but she kind of got the point, like, wow, this guy's trips are really important to him. And so it would have been easy to cancel. I could have got my refund at that point and, you know, yada, yada, yada. But I just told her, look, next February, a year from now, if we're still together, no, I'm going to be gone for 3 weeks. I think it was like 3+ weeks. So yeah, I mean, you got to prioritize what you value in that moment. You know, I did that. And it's real easy. It's real easy to back away, especially from an uncomfortable trip, because it's uncomfortable. There's always a reason that your brain wants to cancel it. So
yeah, you bring up something interesting though. And I think a lot of men have experienced this. I'm sure you probably have buddies that have done this. I've seen buddies that have done this. A lot of my coaching clients have experienced this, who are men. So men will have these things they love to do in their life, whether they're trips or the annual guys trip where they go golfing. I mean, it could be they go visit their brother or sibling who lives abroad. They've been doing all these things that they love to do every single year. But then they get into a committed relationship. Maybe they get married and maybe they have kids. And of course, life changes, this and that. But then that thing that guy loves to do, that he used to do every single year, whether it was solo or whether it was with the fellas, for some reason, he stops doing it. He stops doing it because guilt gets in the way, or society tells him that now he has different responsibilities, shouldn't do that. Maybe his spouse is saying, hey, you could do that when you were single, but you can't do that now. And I think that right there is when they make that decision to stop doing those things that bring them alive, that bring them joy, that brings up a lot of resentment and men that they don't get to get out. And that can lead to some other destructive types of behavior. So I'm curious if you've observed that with any friends or any other men, that there are expectations now that you're married, now that you're a homeowner, that you can't do these things anymore that bring you joy.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly happens, right? As we get older, our priorities change and things we need to shuffle as far as where we spend our time. And I'd say, look, you know, when you're single, there may be a lot of things that you like to do. And yes, when you get into a relationship, you know, that needs to be not whittled down, but you know, there are now shared priorities and everything can't be a priority. But I think it's up to any member of a relationship to articulate the things that bring them a lot of joy and value, whether that's exercise or somebody joins a book club and it's very important to them and they go on a trip once a year. Like, whatever that is, I think coming in and saying, hey, this is important to me for these reasons. Now, the 4th, 5th, 6th tier things that you maybe did every year that, hey, budget-wise, or hey, you're using all your vacation on your trip with your boys, right? Your partner would be like, hey, I'd like to go on a trip with you, right? So of course, you're going to need to insert that somewhere. But yeah, I mean, I think we all need to fight for the things we value and, you know, understand some things might need to come off the list. But like you said, if there's something, hey, this is important to me, this is what makes me, then you need to stand up for that and be sure you're articulating that. Because I think, you know, a lot of times we think our partners are mind readers and it's like, you know, that's up to you to articulate.
Fellas, your partner is not a mind reader. Let's get that out of the way. But you said these words beautifully. Fight for the things that bring you value. And that's that willingness to have what could be a tough conversation. In my experience, most tough conversations last 10 minutes or less, but they're so important. They're so worth having. And if you can articulate clearly why you want to do this, why it's going to bring value, if anything, folks, your wife, your spouse is going to support you versus stop you from doing that. I've had some interesting experiences where every year my wife goes abroad to visit a good friend of hers who lives in the UK. And she goes for like almost 10 days. And people are like blown away that my wife is going away for 10 days on an international trip without me. I'm fired up. I'm stoked for her. I know that when she goes, spends that time with her girlfriend, and she's coming back recharged and fired up and fueled. People, they laugh at this. So something my wife and I do, we have twins. We do staycations alone. Whereas we'll stay in Los Angeles and I'll get away for a weekend by myself to a hotel in downtown LA or somewhere else. She'll do the same thing. And people, when they hear about that, like, what? You let your husband stay a weekend by himself? Like, what do you mean? First, what do you mean let?
Yeah, exactly.
Second, that assumes that maybe in your relationship, you don't have trust. You don't have certain foundational values, but we have those things. So I'm not uncomfortable with my wife doing a staycation for two nights when I know she's going to come back recharged from that me time that she gets. I just find it interesting how society views some of these things sometimes. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think when I hear you say that, I think it's like, you know, understanding what your partner needs and what makes them them. I mean, it's like the whole basis of a relationship. You know what I mean? And like, I know my wife knows I like to do hard things. Sometimes I just a tough climb or a trek or something that just I feel exhausted. She doesn't need to do it with me, but she just understands, hey, this is what he needs. And so same thing goes for your wife, right? Or anybody's partner. I don't know. I feel like anybody who gets sheepish or gets a little weirded out by their partner needing their own time to do things, I kind of like, there's something else going on there with you, right? This sounds like a you problem.
It sounds like a you problem, bro. Right?
There's some insecurities there. There's some discomfort. Maybe, again, some things are unsaid. Maybe there was something about trust that happened in the past that got brushed under the rug. Like, okay, then you need to talk about those things, you know? So.
Yeah, that's real. Hey, I want to, before we talk about the three ways that people can develop some planned grit in their life, I want to go through a couple of your experiences that you've done, some amazing adventures that you've taken advantage of. And I'm going to share links to different resources for Bassam in the show notes. And I'm going to put you on the spot just to share maybe a takeaway or two from these different experiences. Is that cool?
Yeah.
All right, let's do this. You were on an icebreaker. We mentioned that earlier, an icebreaker in Antarctica, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. How many days were you gone for?
On the ship, across the Drake Passage, the gnarliest seas in the world. It was 2 weeks-ish, not more. Yeah.
So paint a picture of those gnarly seas for us, if you will, and then just tell me what was a takeaway from you, because it doesn't sound like you were sitting on the deck getting sun, drinking a Mai Tai.
No. Crossing the Drake Passage is, it's as harrowing as you may have read or have heard, right? It is a narrow channel between the peninsula of Antarctica and the tip of South America where a whole lot of water and wind come together. And so I just remember being on the ship, in the back of the ship, and looking forward, and you're watching it just corkscrew in the waves, right? It's going this way and this way. And, you know, you're just in this washing machine. And yeah, in those moments where you're kind of puking over the edge or trying to hold down your vomit, you're like, what am I doing here? Right. I mean, every decision you had is, you know, this was dumb. What am I doing? I'd get me off this boat, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But as they say, it's never the destination, it's the journey. I think getting to Antarctica and seeing that ice, I mean, it's hard to like explain seeing the glaciers and the icebergs and all that kind of stuff. And it's just a moment of wonder. I mean, it was pure, utter wonder to be on a kayak next to a leopard seal who's just sleeping on an ice floe, or kayaking next to calving glaciers. It's a reminder of my insignificance. I mean, that's what I felt in Antarctica, is that I am a speck on a speck at a speck, and it was just, you know, extremely, extremely humbling to be there, and I find that glorious.
Is it fair to say you weren't really able to scroll through Twitter?
Oh, yeah.
And emails during that trip?
Yeah, no internet, no nothing. You were just with the people who were on the boat and, you know, enjoying the scenery for the most part.
All right. I love that image, man. I didn't even know leopard seals exist. I'm going to have to Google that afterwards. I may have to put that image in the show notes for this. I love that. And I love that also how it makes you disconnect from the rest of life. Those things that we think are important, those Slack messages that come through, those email messages, those different notifications, all things I know that you have turned off, but a reminder of what's important. All right, let's do another one. Let's do Everest Base Camp. Mm-hmm. So Everest is no joke. Obviously, the top of Everest, if I'm correct, the top is like 29,000 feet.
Yeah.
Everest base camp goes how high?
17 and change, I think it is, like right at the base 17. Camp. Yeah.
Okay. So give us an idea of one of your key takeaways from doing that journey.
Key takeaways of that journey is I realized that I am someone who likes the pain sometimes more than the view. So we got to Everest Base Camp. The weather was great. The next day, we were supposed to hike this like side peak. It's called Kalapatar. And it has a great view of Everest. Blizzard comes in that night. And so the guys are like, hey, you know, you're not going to be able to see anything, whatever. And I go, I'm going. It's like 4 a.m. And he's looking at me like, bro, I don't want to. I'm like, I'm going and Nick is coming and so-and-so is coming because we're going. They look at me and they're like, bro, I'm like, I'm telling you guys, we're here once. They go, you're not going to see anything. I was like, yeah, but you can still climb Kalapatar. You know, I mean, it was just this. So there we went up in this blizzard for this view. And I think what was like really memorable about it, I did this little short film about it. And Nick to this day told me it was the hardest thing he's ever done. And he wouldn't have got there if I didn't push him. And he said it like, it helped shape him of just how he approaches hard things and all that kind of stuff. So I'm kind of like, hey, if something is difficult in front of you, I wouldn't run, right? Especially when you paid money to be there in the first place. So I think that's what I told myself is, hey, you paid a lot of money to be here, you know, in the first place.
Hold on, what's the message in, there's something so powerful in that I'm going there, even though I'm not going to be able to see what I came to see, maybe this epic view.
Yeah.
I'm still going there. So there's something there that really resonates for
it's,
me.
It's a statement that, you know, you're owed your labor. You're not owed the fruits of your labor, right? I mean, who knows? The clouds may have broken because storms there are pretty crazy, right? They come in and they go and who knows? And so it's like, look, we're owed this hike. That's all we're owed. And we celebrated when we got up there and the snow was blowing, the wind was, but I almost remember it more because there was a shitty view and we didn't see anything than maybe I would have if the view was great. And we bonded and the four people who decided to go, it was this really tight knit group, right? It was a subgroup of the big group that decided to go. And it was like, why the hell not? So
in the group you left behind, they had to carry your bags down. You wouldn't talk to them anymore. Like y'all punks.
Exactly. The lessers.
I'm sure you were kind of that. That's amazing. I love that. It's a reminder about life, man. There's no guaranteed what type of results we're going to get, but we got to show up every single day on this journey. Okay. Bassam wrote this amazing book called Borders, Bandits, and Baby Wipes, where he talks about this epic journey that him and a couple of friends took in something called the Mongol Rally. If I'm correct, Bassam, you start off in the UK in London, and it was a 4 or 6-cylinder car.
It was I think it was probably 2-cylinder. It was 42 horsepower, 850 okay, cc's. So it's like a lawnmower.
So it's like a lawnmower. He drives a small car from London all the way to Mongolia, not to the south of France, not to Belgium, not to Mongolia. And I'm even curious right now, Bassam, what would that distance be like across the United States?
I think it was almost, if you went from Portland, Oregon to, I think to somewhere in South Africa is about 10,000 miles. It's
wow. And you did this in a small car with two people, the Mongol Rally. Google, there's links in the show notes. Tell me about that journey, because that wasn't a 3-day journey.
No.
Key takeaways or what you got out of that?
Yeah, there's a lot. But I mean, I think one of the big ones it was a 35-day trip. I lost 17 pounds. You know, the car had no AC going through, you know, Azerbaijan and crossing the Caspian Sea on a cargo ship and Turkmenistan and Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan and Russia and, you know, some gnarly stuff. One thing I realized on that trip, and I say it in the book, is I say when you travel the world one tire rotation at the time, what disappears is the broad social brushstrokes of they to reveal the pointillism of us. And what I mean by that is when you have nothing and you're hungry, the only person that matters is the person in front of your face. And the only thing that works is kindness and respect and sharing a moment. And so that floored me. The amount of things that people gave us who had nothing to give was staggering. Again, the people with the least gave us the most. And the people who we were supposed to be afraid of and the people who were the other and all that kind of stuff. And so that, I mean, hit me so deep that I was emotional to the point where I would say, well, I wouldn't be this nice back in my home country to even somebody I like maybe marginally knew. the extent that these people are going to make sure we were comfortable or we were okay, you know, and all that. And so that kind of formed me of just the power of a moment, right? The power of eye contact, the power of a handshake, the power of a smile. And so that's something I take with me. The trip had a zillion lessons, but I think, again, it's just reminding, hey, when you meet somebody eye to eye, we're all quite similar. And everybody's just trying to make a better life for their family.
Yeah, this book is absolutely amazing. I hope it's made into a film one day. It's filled with laughter. It's filled with, oh, no kind of moments. And one that really stands out to me is, I mean, Bassam Tarazi. So you hear that name, so you can probably imagine, unfortunately, when Bassam is traveling, he gets stopped pretty often. Airport checkpoints and all that stuff, due to probably a lot of biases and all those types of things. And you pretty much had to negotiate with some folks at the Russian border that they essentially thought you was a spy coming up in there. Am I right?
Yeah, essentially we had, it was 2014 and I had the first DJI Mavic drone and it was in this big silver case. And I mean, it looked like a nuclear football almost, and there's wires like sticking out, and they, you know, didn't know, I hadn't seen it. So they're like, what is this? There was like this Russian colonel there. He wasn't laughing. He wasn't joking. And so, yeah, it was a hairy moment, you know, with guns and who are you and where are you going and what's this thing's range and can it record when it flies and, you know, all the stuff testing us, you know, to make sure we answered correctly as they were like looking it up online. So, yeah, that happened.
That happened. Read the book. I'm curious for you, having experienced so many things, and there's so much that I haven't told you about, Bassam, you heard about some of it in the introduction, so many amazing things. When stuff hits the fan, when you're having a challenging day, things that people are freaking out about at work, reservations, like I had a reservation, it gets canceled, they didn't tell you. Is it easier for you to approach, you know, curveballs and those things, like things that freak out a lot of people? For you, is it just like, whatever, based on having done some real hard things that most people can't even imagine?
Yeah, but I think it has, as a joke my wife and I have. We use the term Mongol rally as a, hey, toughen up or you can do this. And so no matter what happens in my life, I can go back in my head and say Mongol rally. Like, you driven 14 hours a day for X amount of days in a row and figured out how to get through Uzbekistan, you know. And so it's like reminding yourself that you've done hard things, I think is very important. The second thing that I think is important, I remember on like Kilimanjaro, was maybe the summit day was maybe the hardest thing I've ever done. I think it was like a 20-hour day. We went from base camp to the summit of Kilimanjaro and we walked down and slept in a hotel that night. And I just remember telling myself on the hike down, I'm going to sleep in a bed tonight. I'm going to sleep in a bed tonight. And I think sometimes when we have hard days, we think the world is going to spin out beneath our feet. You can just be like, I'm going to kiss my wife tonight and I'm going to sleep in my bed tonight. I'm okay. And just saying that, I'm telling you, like, just flattens everything out. And the other big thing, I think, is, you know, the only thing we can control is how we react to things out of our control. On the Mongol rally, especially, there were borders, there were things, there were cultural norms that we were walking into that it didn't matter what we thought or who our parents were or how much we paid for this visa already, or didn't matter, right? It just didn't matter. What only mattered was the moment you were in and what you're going to do next. And so that is always a forever reminder to me, like, hey, something crazy happened. Can you believe it? Can you believe it? Can you believe it? I love my sister to death. Sometimes, you know, she talks about the problem and how the problem was there and the flight was delayed. And then, can you believe this? Whatever. The flight's delayed. You're on the tarmac. No amount of beating or my chest or punching the seat or texting is going to change any of that. So I always say, you can choose what mood you want to be in. That's it. You can choose your mood.
And you can choose your mood. Powerful. What two great reflections you said. One, I'm going to sleep in my bed tonight, even during a challenging day right now, even if you're not on Kilimanjaro.
Correct.
Even if you're not on Kilimanjaro, and odds are, whoever's listening to this, you're not coming down Kilimanjaro tonight. You are going to sleep in your bed tonight. I was talking to a client not long ago who's beginning a brand new endeavor in life, and there's some fear and trepidation. But then at some point he said during the phone call, he said, but you know, I haven't missed a meal yet.
So good.
I haven't missed a meal yet. So we have these crazy scenarios where I'm going to lose everything. And we're going to be, no, you're not. Dude, odds are you're not going to be homeless. You're not going to miss a meal. You're going to sleep in your bed or a bed tonight. Am I right?
Dude, I was at Safeway like the other day and I was checking out. It was late at night. And this one guy was talking to this checkout guy. And I just overheard this guy, I, he was complaining about something or something wasn't going his way. And this checkout guy, this really cool guy, goes, "Hey man, we got 2 feet on the ground and air in our lungs." And that's all I heard as I walked by. And I'm still thinking about that statement. I was like, wow, what a great just place to start and be like, okay, hold on. I got 2 feet on the ground and I got air in my lungs.
That sounds like an opening to the most epic rock song ever. Exactly. Can't you just hear that? Like, yo.
Yeah.
So let's do this. Let's transition into 3 things that people can do to develop what we're calling planned grit. Like the things that you actually plan on doing that don't happen. They don't happen by accident. Like you actually plan to do something hard that you can learn, that you can grow, you can be a better man from. So you share with me 3 things you can do to develop planned grit. I want you to unpack these a little bit. Number one, you say we should do something that involves geographical or cultural discomfort. And what's cool about this, you don't always have to leave or get on a plane to practice this.
Correct. Yeah. You know, I think, yes, I've done some crazy things and traveled to far off places. And I have a lesson from Turkmenistan. I realize that 99.99% of people are never going to Turkmenistan. And so not every lesson could be like, oh, go to the far flung corners of the world to learn about other cultures. I think, you know, when I say, I talk about planned grit and getting uncomfortable, it's like, hey, have you been to an Asian market in your town? Have you gone to that restaurant that's a foreign restaurant? You're not sure if you're going to like the food. Maybe it's Eastern European. I don't know what. And so wherever you can, enter someone else's cultural sphere or balloon or whatever that is, and just be there for a while, whatever that may be. And so I've always been like that. I've always been interested and fascinated by other cultures and peoples, again, because I am from, you know, other places, you know, my family. And so I've always challenged people in that way. Oh, but I want to go on a big trip to understand the world. It's like, no, just go have a conversation with somebody at the flea market. Where are you from? Yeah. How long have you been? Where's your family from? What was that like? You know, and that to me just, I don't know, just always opens doors and ideas and experiences.
Oh, that's great. Like, yeah, we want to do this crazy old thing, but there are so many opportunities. I like to talk about being the only one. Mm. Go somewhere where you're the only man in the room. Go somewhere where you're the only person of your ethnicity. Go somewhere where you're the only one of your political party affiliation. Like if you're like a diehard Democrat, go to a Republican rally and see, just see, try something different. Go to a church that maybe you're not even a churchgoer, but you choose to go to, say, a traditional African-American church on a Sunday just to experience something new. Like I live in Los Angeles, this big city where I can get culturally, I'm going to make a word up, discomforted. That's not even a word. Anytime I want, if I'm willing to get in my car.
That's right.
You know? So a few of us are, and it can start with the meal.
Yeah.
I like that. And Basama, as you're talking about, let me pause because we're talking about planned grit right now. And for folks that are listening to this, and if you're living, say, in a Western culture, where I don't think anyone should ever underestimate the value of your passport. Besides, someone in Haiti told you something once about your passport. Do you know a story I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
Could you share that?
Yeah, I was there. I worked for a construction management firm in New York, and we went down after the big earthquake. And we had a driver there. And I mean, it was chaos, as one can imagine. And he was just talking to us. He had lived in New York for years, ended up getting deported. He had a small issue with the law and then got deported. And I remember him saying, he said, man, never take that U.S. passport for granted. He said, you have a passport. You get to go anywhere you want and be anything you want to be. He says, I have a Haitian passport and I can't leave. And he said, just look at all my brothers and sisters out here fighting for food, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And he said, you know, just kind of like, basically like earn that passport. You know what I mean? Like, hey, you get to leave Haiti. I can't. Basically, this is my, I won't say prison. That makes it sound as if, you know, he has no joys there. But it was just that reminder that you happen to be born in a particular country and you won the, I don't want to say genetic lottery, you won the geographic lottery of that little book that you have that says where you can and can't go. And, you know, as an American, or if, you know, you're Western European, you probably have a passport that will allow you to go to places that some other people just aren't allowed to go to. And just that alone should be a nice welcome kind of push to lean out into the world.
Those words you just said, you get to leave. So many people, I think back to my time living in New York City, Basam, and I had the opportunity so many times to go to London, Paris, different places across the ocean for like a weekend getaway, weekend event. And I remember just saying to myself, yeah, but that's 6 hours there and then 6 hours back. It's not worth it. I'm like, now I look back, I'm like, man, it would have been worth it. I don't care if I went sometimes for 2 days to take advantage of that little small booklet that we have. And unfortunately, speaking specifically of the United States, such a small number, a paucity of Americans have passports.
Yeah, it's a wild number.
It's surprisingly low if you've traveled across this great country of ours. Okay, number one, in terms of developing planned grit, geographical and cultural discomfort. Number two, you say always have a project. Unpack that one for us.
Yeah, you know, I think we get caught up a lot of times in work and, you know, whatever it is that we're doing for our jobs. And personal projects could be writing an essay. It could be your garden. It could be a book. It could be a side business. It could be whatever it is. But I kind of feel like just fostering and curating some sort of thing on the side. And it doesn't have to be a create. It could be learning, right? You could be reading about something, about a topic, about Franco-Russian wars. I don't know what. But it's about like, hey, I want to put my brain to use over here in something I'm not good at yet. Because what happens is we get older, right? We do the things we always know how to do. We get put on airplane mode, to give a nod to your book, and we get on autopilot. And so I think somehow injecting a little bit of discomfort on the side. I have a networking event that I throw. Thankfully, now that COVID's over, it's back to once a month. And still, every time I go, I did it for years in New York, I still get a little nervous. I still get a little nervous driving over there. What if nobody shows up? What if somebody thinks this sucks? What if they think it's a waste of time? And yeah, that's all there. And yet you still show up, you know, and people have a great time. And so you are supposed to feel uncomfortable. I mean, I think comfort is the most powerful drug in the world. And we have it dripped to us wherever we want at all times. And comfort is comfortable.
Comfort is comfortable. You bring up something like, and when you finish something, big or small, whether it's for personal reasons, whether it's that education for a course or something like that, we can look at positive psychology. And it says ongoing achievement, and that can be as simple as pressing publish on a LinkedIn article or a newsletter or something. Ongoing regular achievement, I'm not talking about just big things, that leads to increased happiness. And it also increases to confidence. That's as right. Well, in what we do. And I think something we have to bring up, I think this is important to some, is that in this day and age, especially if you open up social media for 8 seconds, you're going to immediately feel guilty that you should be starting a company,
yeah,
that you should be starting some type of business. And I think what you're getting at in terms of having a project, you're not saying someone needs to start a business. Or all of a sudden you got to have your own course. You don't have to. These are things you and I have done over the course of our lives, but that's not a requirement.
Yeah. And I think the other thing you find on social media is this, you're being sold an illusion of ease. Take my course because I will show you how to launch your thing and you won't make mistakes. Just come with me and you'll be safe. Right. That's what we're kind of taught. Like, ooh, I'm going to. But look, there is always discomfort. You are always going to be a little bit uncomfortable out there. And so, yes, don't start the big thing. If you haven't done the little thing, that starts with the identity goal, right? Before you can write a book, you have to become the kind of person who could write a book. Somebody like that is someone who writes 500 words a day or who writes an hour a day for 2 weeks. You know, convince yourself that you might want to do this thing, because make no mistake, there is a lot of discomfort on the other end of whatever you're doing. Antonio, you're a speaker. You speak on stages. Yeah, you get paid good money to do that. But no one just paid you good money out of the gate on your first talk. You had to convince someone, man, that, hey, I'm interested in this thing and let me see. And so it builds in that way. And so, yeah, you definitely, A, don't need to start a company, but B, do not get lost. I call it death by research in trying to find the thing that's gonna provide you the least amount of discomfort. Ooh, I just need a little bit. I need to study a little bit more, or I need to take this course because then I won't mess up. It's like we're trying to not mess up and then succeed, but that's not how life works.
And by the way, just a quick plug, if you do want to finish something important to you, I will share a link to Bassam's course, Ready, Set, Finish, that will get you on your way to making that happen. Okay, this is a great one. When we were prepping before we hit record, we're talking about the three things people can do to develop planned grit. This is what I didn't expect you to share. But I think this is actually an extremely important one for men who are listening to this. And you talked about how important it is to develop relationship discomfort. relationship discomfort. What is that, and how do you view it?
Yeah, you know, I feel proud that I think for a lot of friends that I've had in life, and I've been lucky to travel and live in different places, that I'm not around a lot of my friends often, which means it takes effort. Which means, hey, if you want to continue that relationship, you have to put time in, you have to reach out, you have to call, you have to make that time. And I feel like I've done a pretty good job with the people I've wanted to stay close with. There's a line by Gabby Reese, the wife of Laird Hamilton. She's a famous volleyball player. She always said, in life, move first. Be the first mover. Say, I'm sorry first. Say, hey, do you want to hang out first? Say, I really like your scarf first. And so, sure, building relationships is important. But I think even that human connection part, my mom, I got this from my mom, this idea of give 2 random compliments a day to strangers, see what happens. Again, forget about cultural discomfort. Just, hey, you're in New York. You see somebody on the subway platform. You like their boots. You like their shoes. You like their scarf. Tell them, hey, love your scarf. Just have that little bit of human connection and start there. And so that discomfort of just, you know, being able to connect on a human level. And I'd say, I remember when I was single in New York and Tinder was a thing. I met my wife on Tinder. Before I met my wife, when I was going on dates and being single, I actually loved what my friend and I used to call Act One, where it was that initial date where you went out. And again, nothing had to quote happen afterwards as far as sexually, this, that, whatever. I just liked meeting new people and hearing their story and breaking bread and just talking. And sometimes that's just a lot of fun, just as is. So getting comfortable, having conversations with people, asking questions about themselves, it's just going to make you a better person. Be, as you like to say, you're a professional question asker. The only way Antonio became a professional question asker is talking to people, is figuring out what gets them going. So I think that relational discomfort, a lot of people are waiting for someone else to move first, that friend you haven't texted back, right? That cousin you haven't written back, that whatever, whoever it is. Oh, well, I don't know. I wrote them a month ago. I never heard back. Write them again.
Yeah.
Write them again.
Following up is your job.
That's your job.
You bring up something interesting as you're talking. And I think about it just in marriage, obviously. I always try to find if there's something that doesn't sit well with me. In the past, I'd kind of just let it ride, let it roll, just forget about it. But now it's like in me that, no, address it, address it, address it. Don't wait. Now, does that mean when I address it or I bring it up that it's immediately going to be remedied or my wife is going to agree with me? Absolutely not. But what I won't do is go to bed and end up build up resentment for something that I may have misinterpreted, heard wrong.
Right.
I said it out loud. I think I mentioned this earlier. Most tough conversations with a colleague, with a spouse, family member, take 10 minutes or less.
Yep.
I think one thing that's been really awesome about our conversation, about our friendship over the years, and we've done some amazing things across the globe together, working together as friends and beyond, is that one, we're fortunate that we haven't had friction in our relationship. And if there ever has been miscommunication, it's something that we've always been willing to address head on.
Mm-hmm.
And most people don't do that. And that's how things get blown out of proportion. So I appreciate that. The last thing I want to say on this, and you hit on this earlier, specifically for men, when it comes to relationships, what I've come to learn when it comes to relationships and talking about this idea of discomfort and friendships is that friendships require the willingness to be inconvenienced. Mm. A good friendship requires the willingness to be inconvenienced. One of the most popular issues of the Man Morning newsletter is about this topic. Because guess what? In a day and age when there's Lyft and Uber, why in the hell would you go pick a friend up from the airport? Mm-hmm. But guess what? When you show up and you pick them up and they get in the car and you immediately start laughing and you catch up for a moment ago, even though you're inconvenienced in that traffic, you're so glad that you picked that friend up.
That's right.
When your buddy reaches out and says, hey, will you help me hang some cabinets in the garage on Saturday? And the last thing you want to do with your Saturday is hang some damn cabinets. Mm-hmm. When you get there and he opens up about a challenge or something that he has going on, you're so happy that you were there. This weekend, I am flying from LA to Portland, Oregon to attend a party for you and your wife. Now, some people can look at that like it's just a party. It's 3 hours on a Saturday. Why would I inconvenience myself? Because that's my dog. Because that's my homeboy. And I'm willing to be, quote unquote, inconvenienced, leave my family behind for a couple of days for that. So I'm asking people to be willing to be a little bit inconvenienced. And I guarantee you, it will pay off. Anything and, jump out to you?
I mean, if anybody listens to this, thinks about their friends in life, they are your friends because you've shared inconveniences together. Nothing bonds like strife, right? You have memories, you have stories, whatever, because things didn't go right, because you were inconvenienced and you did have to stay up late and they were drunk and you did have to take care of them. And that is always what drives bonds together. Why? Because you're prioritizing what you value. What you value is that friendship. And so since you prioritize, right? It's this feedback. Yeah. And so when you tell somebody, when you text a friend, hey, let's catch up, or hey, we should catch up, I hope you mean it, especially if you text me, because I'm going to be on you. I'm going to say, great, I'm free tomorrow from 10 to 1, Thursday from here to here. If not, let me know what works for you. I have some friends that are just ghosts. They'll be like, yo, Tarazi, I didn't actually mean I wanted to catch up. And I'm like, yo, you want to catch up? Let's catch up. And so
yeah.
I kind of feel like all relationships are about like what you do. I tell people in relationships, I said, no one needs advice on sunny day, on a good day.
Yeah.
No one needs advice on a good day. No, it's when things aren't going well and you're tired, you have miscommunication, somebody disrespected each other. Like that's when it all matters. And the same thing happens in friendships.
Yeah. The reason why Bassam and I, we have such a shorthand in our friendship and our texts and our voice notes and all of that, because you said most friends who are really close, they've gone through something together. They've experienced inconvenience together. I'm not getting into the details right now, but I can tell you one time, Bassam and I were hosting an international retreat together. And we're down in Latin America somewhere. And let's say something happened on that retreat when someone got physically hurt. And we had a moment when we looked at each other and we're like, I don't think we got insurance, did we?
No one had travel insurance. We didn't have it.
We didn't get... We don't have insurance. We first, I hope they're fine, but did we get insurance? And then you
right.
have this moment of, all right, we're going to figure this out while I'm carrying somebody to a urgent care
in
place
Nicaragua.
That looks like somebody that looks like somebody's basement. Then are you sure this is the urgent care? Okay. Last, as we wind down here, I'm a firm believer that in this day and age, Bassam, that a lot of men who say they are burned out. I'm not discounting mental health challenges. I get there are a lot of mental health challenges with people. I get that there are substance issues. I can talk about the statistics as it relates to men and the lack of friendships and those things that we're really trying to combat with Man Morning. We don't want isolation. We don't want disconnection. We don't want loneliness. We want people coming together to be better, to support one another. And something I found as a coach over the past 10 plus years and the work that I do as a speaker with my books is that most people who say they are burned out, in my experience, they're not actually burned out, besides they're bored. You're not burned out, you're bored. And I've also found that people who say they're burned out, guess what they are? They are in chapters that already ended.
Mm.
They're still in chapters that have already ended because they've been unwilling to get some discomfort in their life, some plan to grit to maybe change careers, to change jobs, to change professions, to take that course, to try something new. So I know I've said that before on stages, and a lot of people don't like that, but I really do that a lot of people say people who are burned out are actually bored.
I think I would add to that. I think it's a twofold thing. I think there are people who I like to say it in this way is that we prioritize what we value. And so if you have nothing else that you value in life and it is only work and it is only pleasing your boss and it is only this metric and it's only getting that raise, if you don't actually care about any of that and it's not important to you, you're going to get that friction. Everything's going to get harder and harder and harder. And then it's like, I'm burnt out because it's boss. And, you know, all we do, my company is we do online document storage and that's what we do. And I'm working 8 hours a week and I don't even care about online document storage, but I need a job. Sure, I get it. We all need to make money and all that happens. But I think at times, if it is getting to a point where you truly are burnt out and you're overworked, hey, it's time to make a change. And yes, it might be uncomfortable and it might be a risk, but you're going to have to leap because nobody's going to think of you in that moment. Or if you are actually truly bored, as Antonio said, it is almost like you are allowing yourself to be inundated with stuff because you don't want to spend the time to think about, hey, what is important? What do I want to be spending time on, right? So if you only value the opinions of your coworkers and your boss, chances are burnout is on the bottom when that Plinko disc hits the bottom. If it's only your bosses and coworkers whose approval you seek or that you're accountable to, it's burnout or being overworked or saying yes too often is probably a byproduct of that, or it's always going to happen.
I agree 100%. This is going to be our last question for you, Bassam. We've talked about some of the amazing adventures you've taken over the course of your life. What is the next adventure that you will be taking alone or that you will be taking with your wife? What's on the radar?
So there is no giant adventure. And when we say adventure, it's a trip. There are a few hikes that I want to do in the Pacific Northwest. Mount Adams is one of the mountains I have not trekked yet. is a bit of a difficult mountain. But again, it's one of those things where in Oregon, you can find some discomfort real quick, right? As far as what you want to go experience. I have had this thought. I've done London to Mongolia. I'd love to do Oslo to Cape Town. It's a little bit of a crazier trip. I'm bringing a kid into the world. Don't know if this is going to happen anytime soon, but at least it's something in my head where I'm kind of like, hey, that might be something I need to do. And I'd say thirdly, I'm a big fan of Arsenal Football Club, and I love taking my nephews to games over there in London. So that is sometimes a great weekend adventure. Like you said, hey, sometimes get on a plane, get on a red eye, be exhausted, go eat a bratwurst in Munich, go whatever it is and do it and come back home. You're like, holy cow. Yesterday I was in London at a soccer game and now I'm going to work. Sometimes you have to wow yourself. In modern technology, you get to get on a plane and go somewhere. Yeah, you're tired. Yeah, the night before you don't want to go. Yeah, in the morning, you can't believe you're going through security at 4:30 in the morning, but you know what? You're going to go over there and have a freaking memory and you're going to have something you can tell stories about one day.
Sometimes you have to wow yourself. I love that. I'll share an adventure that I want to do and I didn't even really realize this was possible. This shows you how incompetent I can be sometimes with maps. I want to drive from Los Angeles to Alaska.
Oh, that's awesome.
I don't know how long it's going to take, but I looked at the map and it's possible and I want to do that. So that adventure is going to be something special.
That's amazing. You stop by and say hello on your drive by.
I'll stop by. Bassam Tarazi, thank you so much for joining me. For people that want to learn more about you and their work, what's the headquarters for you?
Headquarters is just go to bassam.com. I'm sure Antonio will spell it for you in the notes, but BASSAM.com is kind of where all my stuff lives.
Well, hey, man, I appreciate you. I appreciate your message that you shared today. And for everyone listening here, make sure you get some planned grit on your calendar and make it happen. Thanks again, Bassam.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here. Yeah, lean into that discomfort and good things will be on the other end.
Hey, thank you for listening to the Antonio Neves Show. I hope you are fired up to do some hard things and schedule some planned grit in your life. For more information about the episode you just heard, just head on over to my website at theantonioneves.com. Hey, if you still haven't followed the Antonio Neves Show just yet or left a review, I kindly invite you to do so right now. This is how we spread the word, and it goes an extremely long way. And if you know someone who will get value out of the episode you just heard, please share this episode with them right now. Okay, I will see you back here soon with another great episode. In the meantime, I want you to remember that no one owes you anything, but you owe yourself everything. I want you to remember that people care about you, and no one can care more about your life than you do. And hey, remember that the best is ahead. When you work and believe that the best is ahead, things begin to change for the better. Never forget, you have a say in this.